This is Geeks Unleashed, episode 27. Hello, welcome to Geeks Unleashed. This is episode 27. I'm Mark.
And I'm Jasmine.
Each week we cover the news of the week and we pick a couple of things to review that caught our fancy in TV, comics, movies and games. This week's reviews are Batman Catwoman issue 1 from DC Comics and The King in Black issue 1 from Marvel Comics.
And spoiler warning, this is a review show. So if you have not had a chance to read either of these just yet, you might want to pause this and come back when you have. Also at the very end, we'll give you a couple of recommendations of our own. All right. So this news week has been insane. So jumping right into our first news story of the week, WB Pictures has announced that they are releasing their entire 2021 slate onto HBO Max the same day that it's going to be released into theaters. For those of you counting, that is 17 movies in 2021 that are going to be coming to HBO Max and to theaters at the same time.
So that is Suicide Squad sequel, King Kong versus Godzilla, Matrix 4, Mortal Kombat, Dune, Space Jam, A New Legacy, and loads of others.
Yeah.
Crazy. Insane.
That's like every big one. I mean, they already told us that they were doing that with Wonder Woman, which is coming out on Christmas Day. But to do your entire 2021 slate on HBO Max, that's a big deal.
Yeah, I don't think that's going to happen over here. I think it'll just go straight to cinemas over here.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's right, because HBO is geo-locked, I guess. So yeah. That only counts for the US audiences. I didn't even think about that.
Yeah. So they haven't announced anything over here. They're just America. So international markets do make up a pretty big chunk of.
Oh, yeah. Especially markets like China. So how are you guys watching Wonder Woman? So like, is Wonder Woman coming out on Christmas Day over there too? But just in theaters?
It's the 16th. It's coming out.
That's right. You guys get it a week early.
Yeah. So, I don't know which ones are open now, but the ones that are open, yeah, we can go there and watch it and wear a mask. well, it's true. We have to watch it and wear a mask.
Yeah. So, yeah. Unless you eat popcorn for 2.5 hours. So.
I don't know, like I guess we'll drink for two hours or whatever, but yeah. We don't have a HBO Max. We have Disney Plus, where things go across the world now on Disney Plus. Obviously we've got Netflix and Amazon Prime, but no, we don't have an HBO Max over here. I know HBO do deals with Sky Television and things like that.
How do you guys watch Game of Thrones?
So, it used to go on Sky Atlantic, which is a channel over here.
Okay.
All I can wonder is potentially they may release these on like a pay-per-view. I can't see that HBO are going to be able to come up with an app in time for next year to get
for an international market. Yeah. Interesting.
Yeah.
That's that piece. But the theater chain reaction to the news, AMC had a very, very scathing review of this new policy from Warner Pictures. And Cinemark Regal was kind of a little bit less sort of scathing than AMC, but it kind of boils down to Cinemark has said that they have already started looking deep into 2021 and ahead to 2022 as far as what they're booking for their release schedule into theaters. AMC, however, just flat out said, well, Warner Brothers must not be interested in the profitability of these films if they think that they can just skip a theatrical release and still make a lot of money. But the chief of AMC Theaters also said that they are trying to open up negotiations to talk to Warner Brothers Pictures about this. So, I mean, obviously, the blockbusters are the bread and butter of movie theaters. So I can understand why the AMC chief would be as upset as he is, but I don't know. I mean, I don't know how you walk back an announcement like this. How do you, as Warner Brothers, decide like, oh, you know, we already said we're doing HBO Max, but we talked to AMC and we changed our minds.
I don't see them walking that back. I think Warner Brothers will be pretty firm. I mean, I guess all AMC can do is say, well, we're just not going to show your films, but it's unlikely that AMC will want to go down that road because they're going to want revenue. So,
right. So they agreed to the contract with Wonder Woman because they thought at the time that that was just going to kind of be a one-off thing. So for Warner Brothers to come out and say, oh, by the way, you know, we've already decided to do this Wonder Woman. We're also going to do it for 17 films in 2021. Yeah, I don't know what that looks like for theaters. I mean, how there surely there's going to be other stuff. There's, you know, at least from Marvel side, there's going to be Black Widow next year. But you've also got Universal that's going to be releasing Fast and the Furious and the new Bond. I mean, so there's other studios releasing other big tentpole movies, but 17 films that are going direct to HBO also. I mean, I don't know. I don't know. I'm very interested to see what 2021 looks like for the theater, movie theater AMC, world.
Yeah, I was going to say AMC in their announcement, they did say that they don't understand it, with they know vaccines are around the corner.
Yeah.
And you know, a lot of people were thinking sort of by April, the world should start to return to pre-COVID normality. Yeah. I know there'll be elements of this thing kicking around, but
yeah,
you know, it might be that some people are still scared and walking around masking, they don't need to potentially, but obviously I'm not a scientist, but you know, so I can understand why he's upset.
Yeah, so I mean, I think people are going to have to change the way that they deliver content, but cutting out movie theater seems extreme. Mm-hmm. My opinion.
So moving on, Hayley Steinfeld has finally been confirmed by Marvel and Disney to be playing Kate Bishop in the Disney Plus Hawkeye TV series, following blurry video that got leaked earlier in this week. I'm assuming some sort of lucky passerby caught them.
They were at a subway station, so yeah.
Walking down a subway station and... yeah, so, and they have officially released some photos, which we'll put on the website as well, actually, so you can check them out. The photos include both Kate Bishop, which is played, by, like I said, by Hayley Steinfeld, and also the Hawkeye, as you know, from the Avengers movies. And but also, if you are a fan of Matt Fraction's Hawkeye comic book from, I don't know, going back 7 or 8 years ago now, it also includes a dog who is, if you read Matt Fraction, is Pizza Dog. I'm excited. I loved Matt Fraction's run. I'm really excited to see where this is going. So I'm really pleased with this news.
I mean, I don't know why they wanted to keep it a secret for so long. Like it had been rumored forever that Hayley Steinfeld was going to be playing Kate Bishop. So it really took leaked photos. But like even Marvel didn't respond to those leaked photos for hours. It took them half a day to finally be like, yes, Hayley Steinfeld is going to be in Hawkeye. And everybody else is like, duh. I don't understand the big secret behind that one. But hey, I love her. So I'm excited.
Following this, there's also been another leak. Sony has finally confirmed, but kind of retracted, the Spider-Man 3 news will include Tobey Maguire, Andrew Garfield, and Tom Holland as all three Spider-Men, as they released a video on their Sony channel in Latin America, which has since been pulled. I have managed to watch a copy of that video on YouTube before it got pulled, and that video does include a video in Spanish. However, the translation alludes to, if you have a favorite Spider-Man, you no longer need to pick your favorite Spider-Man because that all three Spider-Men will be in Spider-Man 3. That video has basically disappeared across the internet. So if you weren't able to catch it, I mean, I'm sure if you did a bit of a search, you may track it down somewhere.
Yeah, somebody's got to have it somewhere.
Yeah, yeah. So there's a couple of videos on YouTube where people have done commentary on. I noticed those hadn't been taken down, but I wonder if they may get pulled in the end for copyright. But yeah, like finally, it's what we got with the news we've been waiting for.
Yeah.
Spider-Man Marvel Multiverse.
Right. It's official. It's official. We can stop calling it a rumor.
Yeah, I don't get the whole thing. Like, it's just a bit like we said about Kate Bishop, why Marvel are just not willing to announce stuff. Like, yeah, we're excited. Just tell us.
Right. I mean, what are you holding on to it for?
You don't need to tell us the script, you know, but people love a little bit of spoilers. So
yeah. I mean, I'm super excited. Like, as much as I love Tom Holland, I think just because of, I guess, my youth, Tobey Maguire is always going to be my favorite Spider-Man. So
I would
the fact
love
that
it
I'll get to see Tobey and Tom on screen at the same time, I'm super excited about that.
I would love it if this could lead to some sort of resurrection of Tobey Maguire. Why not? Like, you know, like, give him Spider-Man 4. Just do it. Like, just
bring Sam, something.
Bring Sam Raimi back. Do Spider-Man 4 and 5 that he'd already planned, which got pulled, and just do it. No one would, people wouldn't care if there was more than one Spider-Man movie. You know, if you've created a multiverse, we'd accept it.
I mean, obviously, people love Spider-Man enough for you guys to have created three completely separate Spider-Man universes within
10 years
span. Like, this is ridiculous. No.
20 years. It was 20 years. Like, in the last 20 years, we've had three Spider-Man
the only
franchises.
Franchise that has been rebooted that quickly, that often. So, obviously, we love Spider-Man, and we love all versions of Spider-Man. So, give us the damn Spider-Man.
Yeah, that's it. Right.
All right. So, moving right along, we've got a Diggle is going to be making several appearances in the Arrowverse as he set up to guest star in each of the remaining Arrowverse series for the entirety of 2021. So he's going to be in Superman and Lois, Supergirl, Batwoman, The Flash, and DC's Legends of Tomorrow. So does that mean we've got a Green Lantern series in the works?
I don't know if it's Green Lantern series, but I wonder if it's a Green Lantern crossover event. I imagine Green Lantern's a pricey thing for the CW because it's
all the CGI.
CGI. So you could get away with Superman walking around in spandex, like an occasional flight across the city. But Green Lantern is all CGI. Yeah. His suit is CGI. Like, everything about him is CGI. CW probably couldn't afford that. But have they got the green light, pun intended? No, it wasn't intended. but like, have they got the green light to be able to do a crossover with Green Lantern?
Yeah.
I don't know, but I hope so.
Well, I mean, they do a crossover event every year. So instead of it focusing on, you know, the Flash, which is usually how it starts, but like, maybe this crossover event will be Green Lantern related, and it could be like, I don't know, maybe Diggle finally finds a home on another one of these shows by the time the crossover event is all said and done. And they might not have the budget for an entire series of Green Lantern, but hey, maybe we could get one or two episodes where he's actually using the power ring and making like a giant fist or an anvil or something awesome.
Yeah, I don't think they want to let go of Diggle. And I'll be honest, I'm glad. I love the actor and I love the character. And
they
were alluding to it in Arrow as you found out that his I think it was his mum's maiden name or something was Stewart. And so he's John Diggle, and actually, so he would have been John Stewart. So this is Green Lantern. We're almost there. And in Arrow's final 2 or 3 minutes, he finds a box with a green glow.
Yes.
And we're like, we know what's in that box.
Yeah.
Like, why
can't
they
just have been waiting
for
this payoff since the first episode of Arrow, because as soon as they showed him, I was like, that is 100% John Stewart. And then when he was like, oh, my name is John Diggle, I was like, who the hell is John Diggle? Your name is John Stewart. What are you talking about?
I'm pleased that he's gone. I thought what was going to happen, because when he leaves Arrow, he says he's going to live in Metropolis. Mm-hmm. So I assumed that he was going to either be a main character or reoccurring on Superman and Lois. He could still well be, but like the five episodes. There's no dates on these, but I'm excited.
Yeah, me too. All right, so again, moving right along, we've got a little bit of bad news here. So Letitia Wright, who plays Shuri in Black Panther, is in hot water for it was a thread that she retweeted on Twitter that had misinformation about COVID-19, but it also had some anti-trans commentary in it. And it's sort of been one of those things where I guess she kind of didn't read all the way through the thread, and her defense was, if you have a dissenting opinion, then people are going to try to cancel you because of it. But that is not going to fly in this day and age. Look at what happened to JK Rowling when she came out with her anti-trans stance. So this is, as for now, no official word from Marvel on whether or not she's still going to be in the Black Panther movies, but Don Cheadle got involved in this little Twitter spat. So I don't know. I mean, it's getting hard out there for celebrities, you know?
He retweeted it saying, buy the t-shirt.
Like, buy the t-shirt instead of buy Felicia.
Yeah. He was like, buy the t-shirt. Like, yeah. That was it.
The person that she ended up retweeting, like, has a very questionable Twitter feed. But like, it just goes to show that you can't be too careful about what you retweet. And of course, you know, not everybody, you know, people say it in their profiles, but a retweet doesn't always equal an endorsement. However, when you have the size of a platform that she has, you have to be doubly careful because, you know, like, obviously people jumped on this right away, but her reaction to it was also antagonistic when it could have just been like, oh, you know, she could have just fessed up and said, I didn't read through the whole thread. I didn't do my research. I'm sorry about that. But instead she kind of doubled down on it. So I don't know. We shall see how this plays out. You know, I want to give her the benefit of the doubt because I really loved her character in Black Panther. But at the same time, like, there's just no reason for you to be a downright bigot to a
I did see she put a tweet out to say something along the lines of she shared this article for information or something or other, and I don't know. So I think she, again, like you say, though, she probably didn't, maybe she just pressed retweet.
Yeah.
Like, maybe she didn't even read it. Maybe she just pressed retweet.
Yeah.
And then that just blew up, and then she thought, crap, I need to unretweet this.
But like you could apologize as opposed to just doubling down on like being wrong, you know?
Yeah. So other news,
yes.
Oscar Isaac has been confirmed to star in the new video game adaptation of one of my favorite video games of all time, Metal Gear Solid, who would play in the main character, Solid Snake. He literally is born for this role.
Throw an eye patch on him. He'll be perfect.
The script is by Derek Connolly, who wrote Star Wars, Rise of the Skywalker, and a bunch of other things as well. I'm excited. I think Oscar Isaac would be brilliant as Solid Snake.
Definitely. Like a scruffy bearded Oscar Isaac with that sort of longish hair and the eye patch. Oh, man. But like as like this lone wolf marksman going through, just running and gunning. Hell yeah. Like,
oh yeah.
He could definitely play that role.
And from his Star Wars, he had some good humor in there. And I could see it. Metal Gear Solid isn't known for its humor, but like it's a little bit of banter. He could do that well.
Yeah.
He definitely, like you say, chuck an eye patch on him and he's there, you know.
Oh yeah. He doesn't have to do much to get into, like to get the look of the character.
Yeah.
It's just a matter of video game adaptations always have the hardest time kind of coming to life.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just a matter of them on the back end, getting the scripting right, getting everything else right to bring this video game to life. It could be a little bit easier since it's one of those sort of rogue agent type games as opposed to like a fantasy world type game. Because Metal Gear Solid is pretty much like a single player version of like a Call of Duty where you've got a guy that kind of runs into places, shoots up some people, takes some stuff and brings it back to his own group of clandestine folks.
Oh, so. I love to do that. Metal Gear Solid, I remember playing that. I want to say it was around the end of the 90s, like 97, 98. I remember playing that on the PlayStation, on the first PlayStation. I was like, this is brilliant. You know, and there's like, there was like that invisible ninja character.
Oh, man.
I can't remember the character's name.
There's so much good stuff, and it's like you've got five games to work with, so where do you start?
And then I played Metal Gear Solid 2 on the PS2, and then I haven't played that for years. And then I told you actually about a week or two ago.
Yeah.
I downloaded on the PlayStation 4. I downloaded the latest Metal Gear Solid, and I haven't played any of the others in the middle. And I was like, I've been playing it a little bit here and there, and getting back into it, trying to.
Yeah.
It's a game where it's very different to other games. The idea is to hide rather than kill. You know, where most games are literally run in, shoot, kill. This is actually, if you can get past everybody without killing them.
Stealth game,
Yeah, it's quite a unique game. So, Anyway, I'm pleased and excited. I look forward to it. I'd like to hear more. I'd like to see what we're going to be doing in terms of release date, you know, probably end of next
2023.
Year. 2023. Yeah, something like that. So, moving on, Elliot Page has come out as transgender, who obviously was Ellen Page previously, has now come out as transgender and will also continue to play the role of Vanya in Umbrella Academy season 3. So it's quite big news. There was quite a lot of support for Elliot Page across Twitter and other social media platforms, various celebrities and other outlets in support of Elliot Page's announcement. And one of the things I quite liked actually was Netflix going back and editing the credits for Elliot.
So that's nice. Yeah. And you know, they did, they had already like changed Vanya's story so much from the first season to the second season. So she got rid, well, the character Vanya got rid of Leonard, who was a complete loser in the first season. And then kind of paired Vanya with, I can't remember the woman's name, but paired with the woman character in the second season. And that relationship was a lot better. Still kind of wonky because obviously the other woman was married, but that relationship suited Vanya a lot more than her and Leonard did in the first season. So I'd be really interested to see where they take Vanya's character. And I'm excited that they kind of just embraced it and they were like, you know what? Fine. So we're gonna move forward with Elliot Page and we're gonna figure out how Elliot can play Vanya's story going forward.
That is this week's news of the week. A hell of a lot versus last week.
Oh man, so
I think Thanksgiving killed it for the news.
Everybody decided to hold off on everything and they're like, let's just release everything this week, first week of December.
Well, some of it wasn't planned, some of it was leaked. So I think of those things, Marvel, DC clearly were not pleased and had to add to our workload, shall we say. So, so we will move into our first review.
So this week, our first review is Batman Catwoman issue 1. It is from the DC Black Label, written by Tom King, art by Clayman, Tomo Mori, and Clayton Cowles. This book is interesting to say the least. It sort of spans 80 or so years of Batman and Catwoman or Bruce and Selina's relationship. The story begins with Bruce meeting up with Andrea Beaumont, who is an old fling. And for anyone who was ever, ever a fan of Batman the Animated Series, Andrea Beaumont is the woman who plays the Phantasm in the Mask of the Phantasm film, a film from way back in 1993, but it still holds up to this day. Anyway, so it was kind of exciting to open up this book and like the first character that you see, it's Andrea Beaumont. So it opens with her telling Bruce like, oh, my son is missing. And at this point, her son is 15 years old. And of course, my first thought was, is that Bruce Wayne's son? Because Bruce and Andrea were quite a hot item in Batman Mask of the Phantasm, like to the point where they were talking marriage. But before you even get to ask that question, the book immediately jumps to the past and Alfred has walked in on Bruce and Selina all hot and heavy in bed together. Then it jumps again and now we see a gray-haired Selina Kyle driving in this gorgeous, gorgeous two-seater convertible, visiting an old friend in a mobile home retirement community in what I assume to be Florida, because there's beach and old people. So where else would you be?
It looks like Florida with all those caravans.
Yeah, exactly.
And sea and all that. I thought it was Florida too.
Yeah, tons of New Yorkers retire in Florida anyway. So we're going to say it's Florida. But then like the biggest problem with the book is that it jumps. It jumps back and forth, back and forth, back and forth between all of these different time frames, and it's kind of hard to keep up with. So we get to Florida, and then we immediately jump back to Gotham, and now we're at a point where we're kind of following around a married Batman and Catwoman as they're kind of patrolling the streets together, looking for Andrea Beaumont's missing son. And it's just at this point, it's kind of, then we jump back again. And the way that Selena is talking to this old man, it's clear that they have a history. It's clear that they have a past. They know each other really well. And this old man knows that Bruce and Batman are the same person. So they're talking very candidly about their past. But as you're reading, you don't know exactly who this old guy is. And so right when you start to wonder, well, who is this guy that she's talking to? It jumps back in time to another flashback of Selena and Batman talking to the Sewer King. And so like then it's like, oh, well, is this like a really old version of the Sewer King that she's gone to visit in Florida? So back and forth, back and forth. There isn't really much plot or much story. It's almost just like this book, this first issue is just kind of retelling things that have already happened. So it's kind of unclear what exact time frame we're in. Like, are we in the present day where Bruce and Selena are married, or are we in the present day that is like the future where Selena is old, Batman is dead, and she's hanging out with this old guy, like reminiscing on the past? Which is the present time? There is no clear indication of which time frame in this book is present, which is future and which is past. So you come across all of these old villains, I guess, again with the back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. There is one point where we're at the point where Selena and Bruce are married, and Selena as Catwoman is like hanging out on a rooftop with Joker, and they're just kind of shooting the shit, like I guess like old friends or old villains kind of do. And one thing that actually made me laugh out loud was the banter that Joker and Catwoman have with each other, where Joker clearly does not approve of Catwoman's relationship with Batman and flat out says it. And he's just like, this is not you. And she's like, what do you mean? And he's like, well, you're so much fun. And he isn't. So I don't understand how this works. So it was kind of fun to just see that sort of relationship like in the background between Selena and Joker. Anyway, again, we jump in time. We're back to old Selena with this old guy in Florida. And at that point, it's revealed that this old guy is the Joker in disguise. So the whole point of Selena's trip is Bruce is now dead. And she doesn't have that sort of tether to behave herself the way that she did when Bruce was alive. So all this time, she's been harboring these feelings of revenge toward the Joker. And so now that they're both old and that there's not much time left, he finally takes off the wig that he's wearing and it reveals his green hair. He takes off the glasses and you see his crazy eyes, and he starts laughing maniacally. And she's basically like, by the way, I came here to kill you and Bruce is not here to stop me. So that's kind of how I'm assuming the present day story ends, but the last page of this book flashes back to, well, last few pages, flashback to Andrea Beaumont digging up her father's grave and pulling out the actual costume that the Phantasm wears in the movie Mask of the Phantasm. So my question by the time this book is over is, are they really going to finally pull this movie story? Like the Harlequin is the biggest thing that the comics have ever pulled from the animated series into the comic world. But are they now going to pull the Phantasm, the Mask of the Phantasm film into the comic world after it has sat around since 1993 as just one of the great classic animated films, in my opinion? Honestly, the book was a mess. Like, it is very hard to follow, even for someone who is familiar with the Mask of the Phantasm. But like, it's hard to follow because you never know where you are. You never know which time frame you're in. You don't know what's present, what's past, what's future. But at the end, it caught me, and it definitely made me think to myself, I'm going to pick up issue two, because if this series is a Mask of the Phantasm series, then I'm going to be into it. And they make references to that film in the book when they're like, oh, well, Andrea Beaumont supposedly died. She died in a fire with the Joker, which is how things happened in the film. So as they're talking about it in the comic, I'm thinking back to the film and I'm like, yes, that's right. They were at the amusement park and there was a bomb and the explosion. And we know that Andrea survived the explosion because we see her at the end of the at the film. But like, you know, they said, oh yeah, well, everybody thought that her and the Joker died in the explosion. So is that one of the things that they're going to reference? Like, is that why the Joker is in hiding in Florida as an old man? Because he's been on the run all this time when everybody thought that he was dead. So he just decided to stay in hiding. So this book, at first I was not very interested. But again, if they're bringing Mask of the Phantasm into the comic world, I am definitely going to have to keep up with this series because it's still, to this day, one of my favorite animated features that I've ever seen in the Batman universe. So I enjoyed it for that aspect of it. As far as keeping up with the storytelling style and the way that this book is broken out, I did not enjoy it. It took two times reading it through before I finally kind of was okay with it in my head. The first time around, I was very confused. And so by the end of it, I was like, okay, let me just start over, read this again now that I know the end. And it made more sense, obviously, the second time around. But it shouldn't take two readings to understand what's going on. So I hope that going forward, there's a little bit better organization, or at least make it more clear as to where I am in this story instead of having me try to guess past, present, future. But yeah, so if it's a Mask of the Phantasm story, I'm in, but I guess we'll see with the next issue.
I think Tom King is very much a long haul storyteller. He's
long,
not a
long game. He's all about the long game.
Yeah, long game. Yeah, long games. He's yeah. He's very much a long game. So I don't know how much you know, but Tom King obviously started Rebirth. He started on Batman from Rebirth, which was, I don't know, 2 or 3 years ago. Batman came out twice a month. So that's why there's more issues than other books that didn't come out twice a month. I think Batman, Superman, from memory, were the only ones that were coming out twice a month. So he had this long game story to tell Batman story arc up to issue 100. And then that became 106. Then all I can assume is something happened at DC and he was told to basically wrap it up and get off the main book. However, it must have been some arrangement made that he was allowed to carry, like essentially lift and shift what would have been his final arc on Batman across to this new Batman Catwoman series. Mm-hmm. So he left on issue 85, which was the City of Bane story. And then James Tynion the IV took over. His City of Bane story arc was huge. And so his Batman arc was a long game story of essentially Bane killing the Bat, taking mm-hmm. the Bat out again. And as you may know from, if you've never read Nightfall or Night's End, during Christopher Nolan's third Batman film, Batman, there's quite a visual scene where Bane breaks Batman's back, which was, again, from the comics in Nightfall. This was a retelling of that, but done in a psychological breakdown of Batman. So Bane had a long game plan, and that all came to a head in City of Bane, and actually did give a quite a nice conclusion really to Tom King's run on Batman. And then so we pick up on a Black Label book with Batman and Catwoman, and this is most Black Label stuff, a bit like the Three Jokers, is kind of Elseworlds. You know, it's not, it may not necessarily be main continuity unless I guess they want to use it for main continuity.
Yeah.
I can't see they probably will because of the whole future thing that they're showing.
Yeah.
So when I first opened this book, I'll be honest, first couple of pages I actually quite liked. Like, I liked the fact that I was like, straight away when I saw they said it at Christmas, I was like, oh, cool.
Yeah.
I was
all of the stuff inside Wayne Manor is gorgeous. It's like these subdued oranges and reds and just warm colors. So the art at the beginning is really great because it kind of just sets the scene. Like, this is an old friend. I'm trying to help her out. Like, yeah, like you said, you enjoy the first few pages, but then, so on page six, it's talking like, they're talking to each other. And at this point you don't, they haven't jumped yet. So like page six, and Andrea's like, oh yeah, what about Alfred? And Batman is like, or Bruce is like, oh well, Alfred passed away. And like in the same panel there's Alfred, and he's like, so it's pretty late for dinner, so I brought you breakfast instead. And like I'm reading this and I'm just like, I am ridiculously confused, because you literally just said Alfred passed away, but he is standing in the same panel as you. And when you flip the page, it's a flashback to, you know, Batman and Selina Kyle, or Bruce and Selina Kyle together. And it's just kind of like, okay, so it's that kind of book. Like, so there's no rhyme or reason in my mind to these transitions. And it's very hard to kind of understand. It really interrupts the flow of reading, because you literally have to stop and think to yourself, like, well, shit, did I just jump to a totally different time zone?
So with this issue, I kind of had to take it in two ways of looking at this issue. Art wise, it is phenomenal. It's completely stellar. Like, you know, the artwork by Clayman is fantastic. It's amazing. It's beautiful to look at. The coloring is so striking. It's just a really beautiful book. The story is just a mess. Just a complete mess. I mean, and I read every issue that Tom King wrote on his Batman. He's taking the same thing again. He's trying to tell this. It's almost like he's trying to win an Oscar. Like he's trying to write the best Batman story that's ever been written. Yet he's writing the shittest Batman story. Like, in my opinion, I know I might be shot down for this, but I really didn't enjoy it. I'll be honest. Maybe if we read more, it might pay off. It could have been probably double. Maybe it would have been better to start with a double sized issue or big chunky sort of graphic novel size issue to get into it a little bit more. I do not like that. Like, you know, the Alfred thing you mentioned. So it's like the bottom right hand corner, we have Alfred walking in.
Yeah.
Which is a flashback.
But it literally looks like the same thing. Like, it's happening real time.
And then obviously you turn on the next page and it's the top panel is still that flashback. And then it jumps to the future. There's way too much jumping. And what may have been better was potentially changing artists for different points. So like that may have been really hard to do planning wise, but maybe, you know, the present is illustrated by one illustrator, the future is illustrated by another illustrator, and then these flashbacks of Alfred is another illustrator. I know it can be complex, but I've seen it done in other books. Take the coloring out for the flashback.
They could have literally just put a caption that was like 10 years ago, 20 years from now. Like you could have. I don't think that you lose any storytelling aspect by telling me, the reader, where I am.
Yeah, like, he didn't do that. Yeah, he didn't.
It's just really confusing. Like I said, I literally read this book twice, cover to cover, just to make sure that I could understand, like, what's happening. Because he is not telling a linear story here at all.
It's disjointed and jarring. I didn't enjoy it. And it's going to be probably another 11 issues of this jumping all over the place. Now, listening to you talk at the beginning of this review about it, I'll be honest, I initially was like, I'm dropping this. You've kind of encouraged me a little bit to change my mind because of this, because of this Mask of Phantasm thing.
Oh, man.
I've never watched the film, and you seem very excited about the film and the linking with this book. It's making me think maybe I should watch the film. Maybe I should reread this. But I do think from really reading this, it might be better to sit down and read this in one go. I think it's gonna be a very hard book to read, and probably a book that needs more than one read, which is a real shame, because, you know, I was excited for this. I'm not going to lie. I was excited. To step back a little bit, with his run, there were moments during his run on Batman, the main title, that I did enjoy. Mm-hmm. But I did really enjoy the actual relationship between Batman and Catwoman. And what was nice to see was parts and storylines, and James Tynion carried it on as well when he took over, was rather than it being Batman and Robin, it was Batman and Catwoman. And I was enjoying
which
actually
I
that
did enjoy that part, because I'll be honest, I've never read the like all of the lead up to the wedding, and I remember there was a big hullabaloo about, oh, you know, it's finally happening, the wedding episode is real, yada yada yada. So I did not come into this book with knowledge of that aspect of the relationship between Batman and Catwoman. However, my background with Mask of the Phantasm, I feel like it made up for it, because that thread throughout this book is enough to keep me interested, because I love the film that much. And I did have so many questions after the film was done. So my curiosity and my love of the film from 1993, like, I definitely want to see where this story was going. However, if which you're the opposite, so you had no knowledge of the film, but you have the background knowledge on the buildup to this issue itself. So, I think it's interesting that we kind of both wound up at the same conclusion. Like, I want to know what happens, but, like, I'm still acknowledging that the story that you're telling in this first issue is a complete mess.
So will you carry on?
I might actually pick up the second issue, just like I said, just because I have so many questions about Andrew Beaumont.
Okay, so I'll tell you what, we'll bring this review to a close. I will pick up the second issue. I wasn't going to. You've convinced me to change my mind.
Yes.
I will read I will watch the film, but our ratings will reflect this issue.
Yeah.
Artwork is 4 out of 5, and story. So, by the way, we've changed our ratings for comics. We're adding in two elements. So artwork is 4 out of 5 and story is 2.5 out of 5.
Yeah.
That brings the Batman Catwoman review to a close. I will, like I say, in summary, I will pick up the second issue. Jasmine has convinced me. I wasn't going to. I felt the story was too much of a mess for me. But moving on, our second review of the week is a book I was extremely excited for, The King in Black, Issue 1, written by Donny Cates, who you will know from Crossover, Redneck, Thor, you name it, and Ryan Stegman, who illustrated it, and phenomenal artist. This book has been building up. The King in Black, this is like the summer sort of blockbuster movie. This has been building up from the very first issue that Ryan and Donnie took over Venom a couple of years ago. They have been building up to Null coming to Earth, who is the god of the symbiotes. This book, honestly, it just gets straight into it. It's there's no messing with this book at all. I think it's like the opposite of quite a lot of sort of summer blockbuster type comic book sort of miniseries. Is you kind of spend like the first maybe issue, two issues, kind of getting into it, but this issue, honestly, it was straight into it, and artwork was amazing. So you've got Eddie just on the rooftop, and he's literally just speaking to Captain America, like in his earpiece.
Yeah.
So I set myself the task this week of reading all 30 issues of Venom and the Absolute Carnage miniseries. I was definitely going to be.
How are you still alive?
It was hard to I'll be honest. I read like 5 issues on Monday, and I was like, okay, I can get through this. And then I realized, like this morning when I woke up, I was like, damn it, I've still got like 15 issues to go. I had to after work read the rest of them. So it was really cool to actually read all of those issues. And I'll tell you what, if you've not read Absolute Carnage, you should read it. But anyway, so I read all those issues to come into this. So I've come into it from a different point of view to you. So Jasmine, I know you haven't read anything. So that's
no, actually and for, I had no idea who that guy was at the beginning. Like, I just saw blonde hair and a beard, and I literally assumed that it was Thor. And I was like, that doesn't really look like Thor, but sure, okay. Thor got possessed by Venom, and it's totally, yeah, that makes sense. And then, of course, a few pages in, you realize it's Eddie Brock, and I was like, oh, my bad.
So I throughout Donny Cates' run, he's sort of had Venom become closer to the Avengers. Mm-hmm. So when the you know, if you may know Venom of old, Venom has never been the hero. So throughout this book, throughout his main book, he started to ingratiate himself with the superheroes mm-hmm. of the Marvel Universe. And there's some great interaction, actually, in Absolute Carnage between him and Spider-Man. And Spider-Man kind of brings in the Avengers during Absolute Carnage, and Venom walks into the room. He's like, and he's like, no, don't worry, I've told them that you're, and so. That when you see him here and his first words that come out of his mouth, his cap, it's me. I'm like, flipping brilliant. I was just like, yes. I was like, you would never have expected Venom, like, in all your years, like, to be like Cap, you know, like on the phone to Captain America.
Yeah, yeah.
They're
all pals.
Yeah, like they're all pals. Like, and then just before, and then obviously he swings off as Venom. And honestly, Ryan can draw Venom. Honestly, you know, have him draw Venom all day long. That double page spread mm-hmm. of Venom on the webs, and then all the phones.
All of the Avengers logos popping up on the phones is like a red alert.
And then I know you didn't know this, but then it sort of shows him checking in on his son Dylan, who is clearly, as this book progresses, Dylan is going to be a big part of this book. And that's what Donnie has been playing on throughout his run. I think it was around issue 5 he originally introduced. It's issue 7, I think, he introduced Dylan initially as Eddie's little brother, mm-hmm. but it turns out actually it's his son. So he's actually a very new introduction to the Marvel Comics universe. And then you've got the Avengers in their mountain, and they think, so a couple of issues before this, probably 5 or 6 issues ago in the Venom world, Eddie comes clean with the Avengers that he knows that Null is coming. So that gives them, that's why they're so prepared for him coming. But they're not as prepared as they think they should be.
Not in the least.
So following on from the Empire summer event that happened, I know we previously reviewed the first issue on the podcast. I carried on reading it, and actually, the story I didn't enjoy so much, but the artwork again was phenomenal. And how this starts is actually kind of a follow-on from that event, because they've got loads of Skrull and Kree ships just floating around Earth. So if you don't know what that's about, that kind of follows on from Empire. So what they've done is convert a load of these ships into like bombs, mm-hmm. and loads of these Venom sort of symbiotes are flying towards Earth, but that doesn't really go as well as they thought it would. It gets maybe rid of a couple of hundred of them, but thousands get through. And again, do you know what? Honestly, the artwork in this, just keep coming back to it. Then after that, when it flies over the city and you just see sort of the symbiotes making up the words to King in Black, I'm like, this is amazing. Like, this is a real blockbuster book, but done well, I think. And then Eddie obviously craps himself because the symbiotes have made their way to Earth.
Yeah.
And he falls into, I have to say, I really respect this about this character, the dad mode, he comes into, just taking Dylan down to this bunker. And again, I think you said to me before we started recording, you didn't fully understand all of the Marvel references, but when Eddie talks about taking him down to a sort of safe house that Ezekiel, someone bought for him, Ezekiel, that's like, it was a big Spider-Man storyline from a couple of years ago, mm-hmm. Which I've read. And I was like, you know, so I sort of get the references, so I didn't need so much to know the background. I think we talked about this a little bit in when we were reviewing Death Metal by DC Comics. There was way too much stuff that they referenced or whatever without really feeling the storyline.
Yeah.
But with this, though, I think what we'd sort of agreed on was that although they reference stuff in this book that had happened before, they reference it enough that you don't need to, versus like Death Metal, you really were lost.
And so, like, I hate to, you know, I don't want to always compare Marvel to DC, but like, this is a very huge event book. And while I was reading it, even though I don't have the background that you do with the Venom and the Carnage and Spider-Man, I did not feel lost. Yes, I didn't understand the significance of Eddie Brock's son, but I I never felt like I didn't understand the relationship that they had or how he was willing to go through so much to make sure that his son was protected. The difference to me between this event book and the big death metal book that we read is with death metal, it kept making references, significant references to things that I did not have knowledge of. Like referencing a main character's son, like King in Black does, is not the same thing as characters making jokes about another character's death. And I didn't even know that character was dead in death metal. So it's one of those things where it's like, you're making significant references, but with no background, I don't understand what is happening versus in King in Black, honestly, it's just like, this book opens up and literally the shit hits the fan and that's it. Like you are thrown into the midst of this horrible situation. The Avengers don't have control of the situation. Venom doesn't have control of the situation. The only person that is rocking up to the situation, like, yeah, I'm about to turn this place out, is Null. And it's awesome. Like, his introduction in this book is so badass that it's just kind of like, who is this guy and how do I find out more about him? Because he literally comes in and he decimates everything that the Avengers have put into place, the Avengers, the X-Men, like he doesn't care. He comes in, decimates everything, and he's like, here's the deal. I'm looking for this guy. I'm going to destroy the Earth, period. But if you bring me this guy, I'm going to destroy the Earth much quicker than I would if you make me go find him myself. And I always appreciate a really, really good villain. So for Null to just come in, stomp on everything and not even like care, that just not even break a sweat, I was just like, oh my god, is this gonna be one of those books that I'm actually gonna have to continue just because like the villain is such a badass?
Do you know what I love about these crossover books though? Like this is one of my favorite things, because although the Marvel universe is a shared universe, mm-hmm. they all do stick to their own books other than either these type of things or occasional drop-ins, like I don't know, like Spider-Man might show up in one issue of Daredevil or something like that. Mm-hmm.
Everybody and their mother is in this book.
But I loved it when suddenly, like, so you see, just after Eddie takes Dylan down to the bunker, then it flicks to the street where the Avengers are fighting, and they clearly are not, they've sort of they're on to plan B, C, and D now because it's not going well. And then you flick onto the next page and Charles Xavier's like, you know, this is Charles Xavier, you know, we're here, you know, we're here. And it's like, yes, the X-Men are here.
Yeah.
You see Cyclops and Jean Grey and Storm and everyone, like Wolverine. And I'm like, yes, I literally love it when you see like all the X-Men and the Avengers and everyone sort of working together for a common goal.
Yeah. Had everybody. There were Luke Cage, Iron Fist, Kamala Khan. I mean, there's even a panel where there's Black Cat in the background and you're just like, what is that? Like, this is literally all hands on deck. It's amazing.
Honestly, this is Doctor Strange as well. He gets like a panel. He gets a bit of a panel.
Storm
as well.
has,
like,
a huge role in this.
Oh yeah, like Storm. Yeah, because basically they're Thor's busy,
right?
Which is a major hindrance to them. Then when Null walks out, like, which is, it, well, actually, just before Null walks out, so I've got to say this, just before Null walks out, Null controls symbiotes, right? He creates symbiotes, he controls them, and symbiotes control living organisms, humans, animals, but also in the Marvel Universe, their version of gods are Celestials? How do you say it?
Celestials.
Celestials. But these are, like, big, giant things that are, like, godlike creatures. And you just see...
They almost look like sentinels to me.
Yeah, so you can't, as they're coming in, they are covered in symbiotes. So that's a fairly, fairly big thing. And then as they arrive, Null just floats out. And he's literally, like you just said, his opening line is, I'm going to kill your world unless you bring me Brock. But then I'm still going to kill your world.
Yeah.
And then all the Avengers are standing there, including Iron Fist, actually. Like, do you know what I've just noticed? I didn't notice this before. they've got Daredevil there, but I don't know if you so this so this week
yes a girl though because yeah, she no, has long hair
so this week in issue 25 of Daredevil, Elektra has taken on the mantle of Daredevil.
I thought it might have been her.
Matt Murdock is in prison. It's been a big thing like this week in the comics, like it was sort of not announced that this was going to happen, so Daredevil's in prison. Uh-huh. And Elektra has taken on the costume, so that's really cool that like in the background they've got the actual Daredevil that came out this week. That is good editorial control of your thing there.
That is how you do a crossover. And I remember when we were talking about this, Donnie Cates was so excited before all of this dropped, and he was like, literally, this is an event that is going to touch every single part of the Marvel universe, and I mean that, every single part. And so I always had that in the back of my mind when it finally came time for this book. So to start seeing all of these random characters and just like from every aspect of the Marvel universe, I was like, holy shit, he was serious. Like, I mean, I never expected to see Kamala Khan in this like massive, you know, like big fight with the Avengers and the X-Men. Like, and then randomly have the Thing. So certainly we've got to have the rest of the Fantastic Four if the Thing pops up. I mean,
so normally their big gun is Thor, who like they said has gone missing. But like just after Noah arrives, they're all standing there like, yeah, you know, like smiles on their faces, you know, and then basically the Sentry drops in. So the Sentry,
I had no idea who that was.
Oh, so that's so it's a fairly newish creation from, well, I've got to say 15, well, at least 15 years ago he was created. So he was created. He's a modern character who was created with they've done this a few times in Marvel. They create new characters, but then sort of say they've been around for ages. Mm-hmm. So they gave him like a backstory, which was old, but they did that, but actually with a bit of a twist that all the characters forgot about him. But anyway, he's been around for about the last sort of 10 or 15 years. And Bendis made a big deal out of him when he took over the Avengers a few years ago. And Sentry is kind of Marvel's version of Superman, but with a difference. So he's got a split personality where his other personality is actually his biggest villain, the Void. And that's where that whole thing comes, where he rocks up to take down Null, but actually Null just sort of, I would assume, kills him and brings out the Void, which is like, again, Sentry's biggest villain is the Void. And then essentially this just leads to just chaos then, because like he's just taken down their most powerful superhero. This is like him taking down Superman, basically.
Yeah, but basically it was like a flick of the wrist. I mean, it was literally kind of like Cap kind of makes this smirk and he's like, yeah, you have my permission, go ahead. And this guy comes out of nowhere. First of all, like just at first glance, like I said, I had no idea who Sentry was. But in my mind, when I first saw him, I was like, this dude looks like an ass clown, like Booster Gold. Like, that's exactly what he reminded me of, like, when I just on appearance alone.
And then Noel just really, like, lets the S hit the fan.
It almost looks like Noel rips him in half.
Well, yeah, it looks like he's dead. I would assume he's dead or almost dead. And then he just decides to cover the entire planet with symbiotes. That's it. Sun, stars, gone, you name it.
Yeah.
And then what I love is that actually then it goes to Storm, and Storm gets a good chunk of this book, which I thought was pretty cool for a Venom book. This is a book that's driven from a Venom storyline. It's predominantly Venom. But the Avengers and the X-Men have had a good chunk of screen time in this book. Mm-hmm. So then in the end, Eddie Brock realizes that he's got to do the one thing that they've sort of told him not to. He's like, I'm going to step up to the plate. You know, he's asking for Brock. So I'm going to go see Noel. And he rocks up against Noel. They have a bit of a thing, and I tell you what, like you just said, a bit of a flick of the wrist, he just rips the symbiote right off of Eddie.
Yes, and but the dialogue is so great. He's like, I'm gonna take my son, and he rips Venom off, and then he's like, and then I'm gonna take your son.
Yeah, and he's like, you're not the Brock I wanted.
Yeah.
And then it ends with this cliffhanger of Eddie just falling into the streets,
right?
Wait, let's be honest, he's not gonna die,
of course,
but although that would be shocking. So where does it go from here? You've just had one of the biggest bad guys ever. This is like, I think you made a comment a few podcasts. I think you made a comment, I think, when we announced the King in Black I don't know, 10 episodes ago or something, and you said, like, you're excited to see, I remember you said to me, you're excited to see a sort of a villain bigger than Thanos.
And yes.
This is from reading this.
Lived up to the hype 100%. Yes.
So from reading this, 100%, this is sort of Thanos level. And as I was reading
this is way, Thanos was kind of like cerebral. Like, he sort of had good intentions. Like, he was like, you guys are really messing up this planet, so I'm going to go ahead and remove you as a threat. But this guy is a dick. Like, this guy is just like, you know what? I don't like you guys. I'm taking this planet and I'm moving on to the next one. So peace out. But, like, I have always been the type, and I've said this on the podcast before, I love a good villain. I love to be able to root for the villain. And I'm telling you, I have my book open right now. And so page 17 is the page, it's a full page spread where it is literally Null walking out of one of the Celestials. His hair is billowing out into the wind. He's carrying this like massive sword. He just looks like death incarnate. And it's one of those panels where I'm just like, this is probably one of my favorite pages in a comic book in a very, very, very long time. Like, this is the epitome of badassery. Like, this dude, literally not a care in the world. He is so confident that he has got all of these guys beat. And it's just incredible to watch it all play out page after page after page. No matter what the X-Men, no matter what the Avengers throw at him, he's just kind of like, whatevs, I got this. I'm not worried.
So will you read the 5 issues of The King in Black?
Yeah. Okay. So we were talking about this before we started. So at the end of this issue, there is a checklist that they include in the book that says all of the things that you kind of need or that are coming as part of this whole King in Black arc. So when I bought this issue, it said issue 1 of 5. However, there are still in all of the books, like, I know for sure there's a Hulk one, there's a Captain America book, there's going to be an Iron Man, like every Marvel sort of main character has their own little issue of Null and the King in Black and that kind of thing. So yes, I will continue with 1 through 5, but am I going to read all of the other ones that come with this entire series? No.
Right. So just to clarify, with tie-ins, if you're listening and you're not familiar, tie-ins are not essential. King in Black 1 to 5, that is the story. Tie-ins are, what is Captain America doing when he's not on screen? So when we have the main focus of whatever the main story is, we don't see what the other characters are doing. So tie-ins are showing you what those characters are doing. And if it's done well, like we've just shown before, where they've included Elektra's Daredevil in this issue, and it looks like the editorial team are going to be in control of making sure this is linked well. And it was done really well in Absolute Carnage when I was reading the Venom tie-in issues. The linkage actually between the Absolute Carnage and the linking between the Venom book was really well done. You know, there were scenes where, like, Dylan is in the background actually, and it does say, and he's listening into a conversation with somebody else, and it actually does put a little asterisk saying, if you want to hear the rest of the conversation, it's in the main book. And actually I did think that was really well done. And so, yeah, if you want to read this book, you don't need to read the tie-ins. The tie-ins are done for one reason and one reason alone: to make Marvel and Disney money.
Of course.
And then the second thing is, actually, if you're a fan of Captain America, Hulk, whatever, and you are interested in seeing them in King in Black, you can pick up those tie-ins, but you don't need to pick them up. Issues 1 to 5 of The King in Black are the main book. I've heard a lot of people, I haven't had a chance to read it, heard a lot of people talking about the miniseries The Union, which is a tie-in. However, it's not, I've been, from what people are saying, it's not a heavy tie-in, but a lot of people seem to be going on about that. So I'm probably going to pick that up myself. But anyway, to bring this to a close, I am going to read the whole thing. I'm really looking forward to it. Tie-ins wise, no, I'm not going to get any of them. I'm interested in The Union, but other than that, I will just read the Venom tie-in issues. That is it. I'm not interested in going out and emptying my wallet for 18 different tie-ins, one-shots, miniseries. Yeah. I'm just going to get this main book. So as I mentioned earlier, we've changed our ratings for comics. to include art and story. So art, we have given this a 4.5 out of 5. And for story, we've given this a 3.5 out of 5. We love this book. We'll both carry on with it.
Yeah. I mean, I was actually surprised. And I think it's partly because of the MCU, the cinematic universe makes it easier to at least have some background knowledge on a lot of these characters. So you don't feel so completely overwhelmed when you have a big, massive book like this. But even someone like me with no background knowledge of, you know, everything that went on in Venom, Spider-Man and Carnage, I loved this book. I really did.
So as we end every episode with recommendations, it's a slight cheat, but my recommendation this week, it's a big ask if you fancy it, is go and read the entire Donny Cates Venom run and Absolute Carnage, which has been fantastic. Other than three issues, which were not written by him, they were written by Cullen Bunn for the War of the Realms, and these were tie-in issues. And as I said, you don't need to read tie-in issues. These were terrible tie-in issues. I kind of skipped through them a little bit, those tie-in issues. But other than that, Donny Cates' Venom run was bloody fantastic. Like, honestly, it was so good. Like, from the first issue all the way to issue 30. And don't get me wrong, not everything was about Null, although Null has been heavily referenced and mentioned throughout the 30 issue run. Not everything was always about Null, and there were some good stories in between. And the last five issues actually was Venom and Dylan on an alternate Earth, which was an Earth covered in symbiotes, which I really enjoyed. Actually, I love whole multiverse type stuff, so I thought it was pretty cool that they ended up on a parallel Earth and had to team up with the survivors and save the day, as we knew they would. You know, these survivors haven't been able to save the day until our hero Eddie Brock rocked up. but honestly, it's amazing. Like, Donny Cates' run on Venom, I've really enjoyed it. It's when I finished those first six issues, I was like, the first six issues initially, I was like, oh, this is why I read comics. Mm-hmm. And then it only got better. And once it got into Absolute Carnage, I'll tell you what, the miniseries for Absolute Carnage, even if you don't read the Venom thing, Absolute Carnage is such a good event book already. So when I finished Absolute Carnage last night, and when I read that, I was like, oh, I'm so pumped for The King in Black now. Like, that Absolute Carnage book was so good. And seeing the interaction between Peter Parker and Eddie Brock was really good. Like, you know, there's even a point, I think Eddie says, okay, I'm going to stop with the humor. Like, because, you know, Eddie wasn't receiving the humor too well. But it was kind of nice to see Eddie and Peter actually becoming like, I don't know if the word buddy feels quite strong, but it was.
But not total enemies.
Yeah, but and that's how they were. Like, you know, and a lot of my original learning of Venom was from the 90s Spider-Man animated TV show, which ran for five seasons. And that was a lot of my original interaction with Venom and Spider-Man. Yeah, honestly, I really would recommend people just get this, and definitely Absolute Carnage if you don't want to commit to going to read 30 issues of something. Or I would say maybe read volume one of Venom, definitely, because that was exceptional, and Absolute Carnage was really amazing. That's my recommendation.
My recommendation for this week relates back to the Batman Catwoman comic. If you have not seen Batman Mask of the Phantasm, watch it. Batman the Animated Series to this day, premiered in 1992, ran for four seasons before the Batman Beyond spinoff came off. Batman Mask of the Phantasm, a movie from 1993, is still a fantastic, fantastic film. It shows you a completely different side of Bruce Wayne that you don't normally get to see in any of the Batman sort of comics or series. Well, not necessarily comics, but at least in any of the TV series and movies. I can't say enough good things about it. I mean, honestly, Batman Mask of the Phantasm is probably one of my favorite animated films of all time. So that is my recommendation for this week. So take a look, trip down memory lane back to 1993. I'm not going to tell you how old I was, but I was still in the single digits when this movie came out. But again, I love it. I love it. I own all four seasons of Batman the Animated Series, and I actually took the first box set to New York Comic Con when I went in 2014, got it autographed by Kevin Conroy, because he is still phenomenal voice of Batman. Anyway, Mask of the Phantasm, it's so great. If you are interested at all in Andrea Beaumont's story, how she connects to the Bertinellis, they don't specifically mention Huntress, but there is a huge Bertinelli connection in that film, which they do reference in the comic, the first issue that we read today. Again, Batman, Mask of the Phantasm, definitely worth your time. Hour and a half, it's worth it. It's a great film. And as a reminder, don't forget, we did start a second podcast series where we tackle some of the most essential graphic novels of all time. Our third Late to the Party Book Club episode was Brian Lee O'Malley's Scott Pilgrim's Precious Little Life, where we were joined by Robbie Billups of the Pop Culture Philosophers. That episode just dropped on the 1st of December, so be sure to check it out. And our next graphic novel is going to be Monstrous, The Awakening. That episode is going to be coming out sometime in January of 2021.
You can also follow us on social media. We are Geeks Unleashed on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter.
And you can listen to this podcast wherever you get your podcasts. Podbean, Google, Apple, Spotify, everywhere. We are everywhere. And be sure to give us a 5-star rating.
Thank you very much. Hope you enjoyed the episode, and see you next week.
Bye.